This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. Coming up at 5:30, a Jaden Daniels Tape Tuesday breakdown, but right now it is time for Not My Beat.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
As always on a Tuesday, it is time to welcome in our friend Mitch Tischler, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast with J.P. Finley. Mitchell, how are you, sir, on trade deadline? Marshawn Lattimore is a Commander day.
Today is a full-on day for air horns. We got to let those things ring. Holy potatoes, I cannot believe that he's a Commander.
Thank you, Anthony. Excellently done. And we got a full-on holy potatoes from Mitch Tischler. Let's start here, Mitch, before we get to the fit, before we get to the football of it all. Did you think Adam Peters would wind up swinging the biggest trade of the day on deadline day?
Absolutely not. I did not think the Commanders were going to make a big move. When you look at, you know, what the trade compensation was, which I'm sure you guys have gone through already, it wasn't the most massive compensation as far as trade when you consider the other guys that they have that they've given up to make this trade happen. But I thought if they made a move, it was going to be a fringe move at best. But here he is swinging that stick and putting this team in a real position to compete for big-time things when it comes to late January, early February.
So for me, I was always not opposed to making a big trade, but if you were going to do something significant, I did hope that it would be someone who would be here long term, kind of the Chicago Bears method from last year of, hey, let's acquire Montez Sweat and just beat free agency, if you will. Although for Chicago last year, they were in a unique spot of not really having their draft pick matter because they had the Panthers pick. And so when they won a few extra games at the end of the year, not that big of a deal, whatever, but they were able to sign Sweat long-term and, you know, he continues to be a big part of their defense. For Washington to give up the third rounder and have it be for potentially a rental, what do you make? I don't disagree with the move, to be clear. I'm not saying this from a critical place. I'm just curious what you make of it and how you think Peters will explain that part of it, of being willing to give up a somewhat significant piece for what is a rental barring some kind of contract change.
Well, I think Adam Peters is going to justify it by looking at, you're essentially trading Jahan Dotson, John Ridgeway, and a fifth rounder and a fourth rounder for Lattimore and a fifth rounder. I mean, certainly if you break it down to third, fourth, and sixth, and you talk about the actual picks, but those were extra picks that they acquired, you know, this season or during the offseason / this season. And so what I'm interested to hear from Adam Peters is, when they made those moves, was the idea to build up something so that if they found themselves in this situation, they had the ammo to make a move that wouldn't necessarily affect the future in terms of draft compensation. But listen, I mean, this organization has talked about recalibration from the beginning, and that thing happened way quicker than anyone expected because Jaden Daniels came out of the gates and is a superstar in this league immediately. And so I think the recalibration now is not for the players, it's not for the team, it's not for ownership. I think it's for fans and media. We have to rewire the way that we think about this franchise and rewire the way that we think about these moves. Sure, it could be a short-term rental. What if he comes in here and is the player that we've seen on the field in New Orleans, you know, for the past five seasons and is great? And not only that, but he frees up some of the rest of the secondary to do things that they are more comfortable in. That could turn into a long-term signing. And, you know, there are a bunch of players in the locker room that know him, you know, from his time at Ohio State. I think it's an interesting move, but I think it's the right move. And when your window is open in the NFL, I think you need to, you know, I think it was Sean McVay, attack success. And I think that's what you're seeing Adam Peters and Dan Quinn do right now.
Mitch Sischler, Beltway Football Podcast, with us on the Hoffman Show. I don't disagree with that. And I think you hear, obviously, the report from the weekend, Adam Schefter saying there are players around the NFL that are basically like, get me to Washington. And if you can't get me now, then we'll try to get there later in free agency. And maybe Lattimore does come in and it gives them a leg up to re-sign him sometime either later this season or even in free agency in the offseason because he has a good experience here. What did you think of Washington's defense coming out of the Giants game as they prepare for Pittsburgh and Philadelphia the next couple weekends versus how you feel about them now with Lattimore in the fold?
It's that was a good pun when you said if you get a leg up with Marshawn Lattimore, because obviously the concern or the question is how far along is he in that hamstring recovery and when is he going to be able to step in and play? And certainly I don't think that Adam Peters and Dan Quinn would make this move if they thought that this was a long-term issue with them. However, we don't know exactly where he is in recovery, whether he's going to be able to step right in and play. But big picture, I think you look at that secondary and, you know, the games that they've been challenged by good quarterback receiver combos, they haven't really stepped up to the plate that much. And they haven't been able to, you know, none of their corners are shut down corners. And so as far as the pass defense goes, I love what it does for them because it frees up, you know, Benjamin St. Juice to become your number two corner. And I think that's a position that he can be at least accepted by the fan base, the coaching staff, everybody as, you know, a better position for him than having to be your number one corner. It also allows, obviously, Mikey Sainer still to work his way back into the slot. And I've seen a lot of people talk about, you know, those guys being more comfortable in those positions. And I do think that's, you know, a real piece to this trade, but let's not sell Mikey Sainer still short. You know, this is a guy who is probably more comfortable in the slot, but has done a admirable job on the outside and has proven that in a pinch you can move him out there and he'll make some plays for you. I just think as a whole, you look at the secondary and how much it helps having a guy who potentially could be a shutdown corner, who's a lockdown one side of the field. You don't necessarily have to worry about rolling a safety over top of him every single time. And by doing that, you allow, you know, Jeremy Chinn to step up. You allow Frankie Luvu to get after the quarterback a little bit more. It allows you to be a lot. We talked a lot about Cliff Kingsbury and how he's multiple on offense and, you know, he's creative and a lot of eye candy. I think now Joe Witt and Dan Quinn have a little bit more ammo to do similar type things on the defensive side of the ball. And we know how successful they can be when they do have a corner with that ilk.
No, that's a great point because I do think that Joe earlier in the year was more aggressive with some of that stuff and then kind of had this moment where he went, I don't think we can do that. And so eventually, you know, how long that takes to get to that level where they trust the communication on the back end, where they trust Lattimore's hamstring, they trust him with a full complement of reps. Like that is a kind of an interesting thing with the schedule, Mitch, is they have Pittsburgh now, short week for Lattimore-ish, coming in, you know, assuming he gets here tonight, practices the rest of the week. But he's got to learn as much of the playbook as they're going to give him for the week. And then it's Thursday Night Football. So it's not even like you have two full weeks. He's going to get here and within 8 days play two games. And that's not the ideal situation to onboard someone new. Although I will say I talked to Charles Davis in a conversation everyone can hear about 50 minutes from now. And he did say for corner, he feels like that's a little bit easier transition than a lot of other positions, because ultimately they can look at him and be like, play man, got it, right, and play cover three, got it, and it's mostly the same spot to spot.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing is going to be him understanding, you know, what the reads are that Joe Witt and Dan Quinn kind of put in for this defense as far as that goes. But like you said, he's a lockdown man corner. Hasn't allowed a touchdown in man coverage since 2021, you know.
Hey, I'm sorry. Hold on. Right, what did you just say? I've seen a lot of stats today. You said what?
He has not allowed a touchdown in man coverage since 2021.
That's good, Mitchell.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And to your point, they do have two games in 8 days, which is obviously not ideal in this situation. But like you said, hey, Marshawn, go cover George Pickens. Man-to-man, don't let him beat you over the top. Hey, go cover Devonta Smith or, you know, A.J. Brown or whoever it is that he's going to cover when they play the Eagles. Don't let them get over top of you. Because you know who feasted on the Commanders last year? A.J. Brown had a pretty dang good day. And I don't want to overlook the Steelers in any which way, because that game is a very important game, particularly when you look at, you know, kind of the pantheon of the NFL and where the Commanders stand in power rankings and all those different things. But if we're being honest with ourselves, that Eagles game on Thursday night is a little bit more important. That's probably going to be for first place in the division. Amazon's going to get a great Thursday night game, and all of a sudden you have a defense that's going to be, you know, amped up a little bit, have a little bit more help for them as they head into that game. I'm super excited to see where this thing goes.
Yeah, those Philly games have been looming large in the back of my mind, specifically because of how Philadelphia wants to play, and I feel significantly better about it now. Mitch Tischler, co-host Beltway Football Podcast, with us here on the Hoffman Show. And, of course, the Steelers make two moves today, too. Their next opponent, they add Mike Williams, who is someone that I think St. Juice can stick with. Like, that is something to watch. He has been explosive down the field, but he's not like the most nuanced route runner. He's just like a big dude, and he's not like the speediest guy either. He's just big and good at catching the ball. So one-on-one, St. Juice, like, can you be in position and actually make a play? We'll see, as I would assume that Lattimore gets a lot of pickings. But they also acquire our old friend Preston Smith, Mitchell, and off a week where the Commanders' offensive line was fantastic. How do you feel going into this Pittsburgh matchup with T.J. Watt on one side, now Preston on the other, and a whole bunch of good players in between?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like what you said about Mike Williams. I kind of look at him as the wide receiver version of Benjamin St. Juice. Big body, can make good plays, big plays, but isn't a guy who's going to wow you with any technique, speed, quickness. They're big guys who can use their size to get themselves an advantage. That should be a pretty fun little matchup there. The Preston Smith trade was interesting. I was surprised that the Packers were moving on from him. I know that the Steelers have had a lot of injury attrition at their end position, so they needed a little bit of help coming in. And obviously, he's a guy that Commanders fans that we know well, as he's been around. But let's be honest, that when you look at that Steelers defense, you're looking at T.J. Watt on the end. You're looking at Cam Hayward in the middle. I mean, those two big bodies are going to be a load. What I like when you look at this matchup is T.J. Watt is a better version of whatever the Giants had off the edge, and Brian Burns is a very good edge rusher. Cam Hayward isn't quite the big body that Dexter Lawrence is in New York, but similarly, I think you generally have a similar matchup, offensive line versus defensive line with the Commanders. And you know, I was super impressed with Brandon Coleman on Sunday, first game that he was, you know, the man at left tackle, and he stepped up and played well. I was impressed with Cliff Kingsbury, who did the right things in terms of giving him help, giving him chips when he needed it. And let's give Bobby Johnson, you know, a little hat tip. He went back up to New York, faced a Giants defense that led the NFL in sacks. You know, he was run out of town last year. Folks, you know, had pitchforks at his doors for how that Giants O-line had played. And he walked back in there and, you know, kind of gave him a proverbial middle finger there, allowing no sacks to the NFL leaders. So, you know, T.J. Watt's going to be a handful for, you know, for this O-line and for Cliff to scheme around. But they've done a really good job all year of doing that. And they played some other elite edge rushers and haven't gotten, you know, entirely burned by them. So I think you accept that T.J. Watt's going to get, you know, a sack or two, or, you know, have a little bit of an impact on the game. It's whether they're able to limit that to not affect Jaden, you know, down to down, play to play as they go forward.
It's something that Logan and I talked about this morning, of how the Commanders just seem to understand the order of operations, that it doesn't matter how good your route concepts are. It doesn't matter how good your quarterback is at really anything if he's back in the pocket dead. And the fact that the Commanders just are always willing to add chip help, always willing to move the pocket, always, hey, let's do pop pass here and give a little zhuzh to a regular pass concept to make sure that the run, or the pursuit thinks it's run for a hot second, it slows it down. And so it wouldn't surprise me if they do something crazy like, hey, John Bates, you're going to play every snap at half right tackle. You and Andrew Wiley are responsible for TJ Watt on every single play. It's 2-on-1. We're never doing anything else. Like, Cliff understands on a fundamental level, just to be clear, he's not actually going to do that. But, like, on a fundamental level, TJ Watt could still ruin the Commander's day on Sunday because he's TJ Watt and he's that good. But it's going to have to come in spite of some massive effort to prevent him from doing so, because there is such a clear fundamental understanding compared to, say, what the Giants did, where Daniel Jones just has no time ever. The pocket is ever collapsing upon him, and their pass offense is somewhere between enigmatic and non-existent because of it.
I believe we call that the Sam Howell offense.
Yeah.
If you like. However, what I like about Cliff, he hasn't been shy about having Trent Scott be in as a tackle-eligible sixth offensive lineman. But what you mentioned about the route combination situation is also impressive, because there are times that they have seven guys blocking and have three guys out in routes, and they're still able to find space. One particular play was I believe it was second quarter. Noah Brown had about a 20-yarder when Jaden just dropped it right over the linebacker's heads in zone coverage. What I loved about that play was they had six guys blocking. You had Noah Brown in motion, so they were able to identify for Jaden that they were in zone. And you had Deami Brown run a deep route to run off the safety. And then they just floated in Noah Brown right behind, you know, that second level. And Jaden, of course, made an incredible throw with a lot of touch to get him the ball there and get a big gain. But you see them do it in a lot of different ways. We've seen them go everywhere from, you know, lining up five wide to two running backs in the backfield, no tight ends, to lining up with eight men on the line. You know, they've done a really good job of varying the offense and still finding ways to get guys, to scheme guys open. And it's been impressive to watch. And I think as you look at, you know, this progression, you know, one of the things that we've talked about every week and everyone's been concerned about is whether teams are going to catch up to Cliff Kingsbury. We're 9 weeks into the season. We're halfway there. You know, I think that we're seeing a evolved Cliff Kingsbury offense, not running into the same issues that he ran into when he was in Arizona and was the head coach and dealing with a lot of different things. Of course, it helped that Jaden Daniels is back there, but it's been fun to watch.
No doubt, with Jaden being someone who can just bail them out. There's one of my favorite just wacky plays from Sunday is, I think it was like Chris Rodriguez's second snap. He doesn't play basically the entire first half, if at all in the first half. They're like, eh, let's try C-Rod out here in the second. And he just completely misses his assignment on a pass protection. And I think it's a play action, so those are a little bit harder for the backs to give him some slack. And to really compliment him, he doesn't give up on the play when Jaden just completely makes the DB miss. Now he's a runner, and C-Rod just goes and lead blocks for him, and it winds up being a 15-yard game when you're against a nickel blitz where your back just totally misses the assignment. So there's some stuff where, yeah, Jaden bails you out. But to your point, I think the way that Cliff has always been able to tweak these runs and just find stuff, and the fact that they did it Sunday without Brian Robinson, that is next level stuff. And we actually talked about this a lot this morning with Logan, where I was like, man, it feels like they're running 1,000 different runs. And he's like, dude, they're running like 4 or 5 runs. They just dress them up so many different ways that it looks like 1,000 runs. And the thing is, to the defense, it's going to feel like 1,000 different runs. But to the offense, it's bounce, it's duo, it's inside zone, it's Wanda. Like, it's the same 4 or 5 runs. And so they know how to execute them against anything, even if it looks completely different to the defense. And that's the kind of thing, Mitch, to kind of bring it home. I don't know what the adjustment is to that. I'm not an NFL defensive coordinator, but that feels like something that is very hard to quote-unquote figure out in the way that Kliff has been figured out in the past.
Right, and you know, to that point, there have been a couple formations that have become familiar formations for us to watch in-game and to some extent in practices and whatnot. And this week in particular, and it started a little bit last week, you know, you would see, I'll just say, a particular formation, and I'd be like, oh, this is a quarterback run. This is a quarterback power. Or, oh, this is a counter tray. Or whatever, you know, particular run it is that you see that I've seen a lot out of particular formations. And they were working on the second level of those runs. Play actions, you know, read options, whatever it may be, to kind of show the defense what they think they've seen on film for the first 8 weeks, and then, you know, working off of that. And it's fun to watch because it's a progressive offense that we're seeing make progressions each week. And quite frankly, you know, we both have watched a lot of Commanders football, and I'm not taking any shots at any previous offensive coordinators that have been here, but, you know, I've been covering the team since 2008, and I don't know that I've been able to as readily identify an offense that is clearly showing a defense, hey, I know that you've seen this on tape. This is our counter to what your counter is going to be to us. And I just think it's kind of, you know, third dimension thinking, and it's been fun to watch.
100%. Mitch Sischler, Beltway Football Podcast, is out daily during the season. He and JP Finley, and of course, they're live on the Monumental app postgame on Sundays. Mitchell, always a pleasure, sir. We'll do this again with the air horns ready next Tuesday.
Hey, hopefully we're talking about after a Steelers win and getting ready for a big division showdown with the Eagles.
That I am Craig Hoffman, and I approve this message. Mitchell, thank you.
We don't do politics here, Craig. You know that.
I did not do any politics, Mitch. I just said goodbye. All right, that's Mitch Sischler, everybody. That's all. That was just a little fun on Election Day, Anthony. Because guess what? No matter who you're voting for or voted for at this point, you got about a little over 90 minutes to get to the polls if you're on your way. By all means, we endorse voting on this show. We have made it through our last NFL Sunday with having to hear the message, I am insert candidate and I endorse this message. No more political ads when we watch the NFL this weekend.
Finally.
And even though I am someone who is a bit of a politics junkie, I could not be happier. Literally muted the commercials this weekend. Didn't need it. We're done. I'm Craig Hoffman, and I endorse this message. When we get back, how about a little Jaden Daniels film breakdown? Logan, I just talked a couple of things that we mentioned with Mitch in terms of the conversation I had with Logan this morning on Take Command. A lot of the run game stuff, you're going to have to go to the Take Command podcast to get. The Jaden Daniels portion of the show, that we're going to play for you on the radio next.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With the second pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Washington Commanders select Jaden Daniels.
Jaden Daniels holds the keys to the Commanders' future.
Daniels is going to walk it in for the touchdown.
Take Command holds the the keys to knowing how he played.
In the big moment when you needed to make plays, he just consistently made plays.
It's time for a Take Command Tape Tuesday.
Jaden Daniels just lays it out there perfectly. What a throw.
On the Hoffman Show.
Just a nice other, you know, easy day. 200 plus yards, two touchdowns, no picks. I think he threw seven incompletions on the day. Chill day at the office for Jaden Daniels. That's what it looks like on paper. Then you watch some of the film and some of the ways he elevates this offense again show up. And I feel like in many ways, Logan, this was kind of like what the average game is going to be for Jaden Daniels. A lot of accurate balls, a lot of good decisions, maybe misses a couple of reads here and there, but also makes up for those missed reads with three or four plays that just absolutely crush a defense's soul. There's one play where Chris Rodriguez misses a block. Jaden just sidesteps, and then all of a sudden, C-Rod's out in front making a lead block as Jaden scrambles for double digits. And you're like, that should be a sack. It's not. It's a 15-yard gain. And so those little things just add up, break a defense's back, and that's how you score 27 points. They could obviously score 30 if they wanted to run it in at the end. And, yeah, man, where do you want to start with Jaden? Which category of decision-making, accuracy, reads, where do you want to start?
I think it's, I don't know, probably decision-making to me. Like, yeah. I think that's a thing that just has been super impressive. And I've said this a couple times now on other stuff that I've done. It's hard to overstate how good his decision-making consistently is. Because you expect he's a rookie, you expect him to not see stuff very well. And again, like, you got to give credit to Cliff. Cliff's done a great job scheming up the offense. We've talked about how he's kind of done a good job of making sure the first read is open. Guys are winning for him. Terry, Zach, the screens to Austin. Those are kind of, you can trust those guys to win in man-to-man situations. That's been great to see. Noah Brown's resurgence or ascension as the second wide receiver, kind of explosive play weapon here, has been really impressive. There's a lot of cool stuff going on, but like, Jaden is just super protective of the football. And I think the thing that is maybe the most impressive to me is just kind of his ability to say like, oh, it's not there. I'm going to scramble. I'm going to get 5 yards. I'm going to get 6 yards. There's a free runner. I'm going to make that guy miss and get a first down. And that stuff is so incredibly valuable in terms of keeping the offense on schedule. So not only is he making good decisions as a runner, he's making good decisions as a passer, and he's making kind of like big time throws. Like, I talked about that throw to Noah Brown where he's kind of cutting across the middle.
Dude, what the hell was that?
I was on the field and I was standing right behind him. So like kind of near, like in the end zone. And it's cool to see because you get to see kind of what he's seeing. And you could see the crosser coming into his vision, and McFadden is dropping out of there like a bat out of hell. And I'm like, that's covered. But I think his understanding of what like NFL open is and body position of the defender is starting to come alive a little bit. Like, you saw it on the touchdown of Terry, and I think you see it really acutely here. I'm going to throw it right over that linebacker's ear. I'm going to protect the receiver from that corner that's kind of getting some depth, and the ball is right there. And like, that was a beautiful throw, beautiful decision, big time opportunity. And he's making those big time moments. And I think the offense in general is doing a good job of making sure you don't have to do it all the time. And that's where, like, we'll talk about this on Thursday, but that's where like the Pittsburgh stuff becomes really interesting, because they're going to change this dynamic, I think, a little bit. But yeah, like, that ability has been really impressive to me.
Yeah, that throw to Noah Brown where he just understands like, yeah, this linebacker's going to the spot, but he can't see. And if I put the ball by his ear hole when his head's facing the other way, like, he's not a threat. It's just a ridiculous throw. I know Nikki pulled the All-22 and put it on Twitter. If people want to go watch that, just go to at Nikki Javala and scroll back in her tweets a little bit. But shout out to the great Nikki Javala. It's really impressive, the accuracy on you know, also just like keeping the ball away from trouble. You know, hey, this is a quick game, but like, if I put the ball on the right shoulder, like, my guy's going to take a hit and it might be an incompletion. Ball might pop up in the air. If I put it on my left shoulder, like, I can peel him away from contact. He's still going to get hit, but like, he's going to be able to securely catch the ball and go down. It's little things like that that just keep the offense on schedule. And then, you know, I think, like you said, the decision making of when to run was really good in this game. And it's almost like, it feels like he has the ability to almost pause the tape in real time, if you will. Like, when you're watching the All-22, at least for me, like, there are times where I'm like, okay, I want to see what's happening right now. and you hit pause and it's like a snapshot. And it's like, okay, this is where guys are. Here's some space. And it almost feels like he sees the full field like that in real time from the pocket, because his understanding of, I need to be looking here, or, hey, if all these guys are covered, then the space must be over. Like, wait a second. If seven guys are here, then there's no one over here and I can run over there. Like, it's that snapshot in time and then the decision-making and processing to know what to do with it that I think is just, it's not just like supernatural for a rookie. It's elite for any quarterback in the league.
Yeah. And I think if you're going to talk about that ability, is the offensive line's done a great job of giving him time to do that and just play and do his thing. And I think, I forget if it was Wiley or Allegretti post game, I think John Kime said something about how, like, if as long as we're doing our job, he can do his job. Yeah. And that group has just done a great job. And it's everybody. It's the whole offensive ecosystem that allows that, because, like, I look at Daniel Jones, and I think Daniel Jones actually played a pretty good football game. I think there's things that he does well when you watch the film of him, but the offensive line just collapses around him. And everyone's like, oh, he's not making this throw. It's like, you can't. There's like no space for him to do it. And I think, like, when you look at the depth and the width of the pocket, in addition to just making sure there's no free runners, like, the O-line's doing a great job, and it allows him to kind of get back there. And there are times, you know, he's done a great job, I think, recently of being on rhythm. There are times where he's a little off rhythm, but you don't feel like stressed for him. You know, even the check down to Austin Eckler, like, they do a great job. It's five-man pressure. They pick it all up. He loses a little bit of ground. The deeper route concept's dead, and he's able to kind of wait for Austin to, like, clear the other crosser and throws a great ball to him. And you're just like, that doesn't happen unless the protection's excellent. And he has to see it and get the ball there. But so it's this cool, like, it's just good offensive football, which is a lot of fun.
Pop quiz. I don't know if you've seen this, but I've done this to Anthony. I did this to Michael Phillips yesterday, but you should be the best one at this because you've watched the All 22 at this point with your eye. What percent of snaps did the Giants blitz on Sunday?
It felt like a ton. I'd say over 50% is what I would say.
You're correct. It was 60%.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, to those of you that have not watched the All-22 or have not listened to my radio show, that might be shocking to you because the Commanders allowed 5 pressures in 25 dropbacks against a 60% blitz rate. So, like, when you're talking about the offensive line playing at that high of a level, like, this is against the best team in the NFL sacking the quarterback this year. They allowed 0 sacks. They allowed a 20% pressure rate. Dexter Lawrence, for the first time this year, had no pressures on 19 pass rushes. That's crazy.
Yeah, and so that's a couple things there. One, that's a great protection plan. That's backs and tight ends and receivers knowing how they impact the protection. And also, credit to Cliff, man. They ran the ball 37 times, and a lot of those blitzes come as run-stopping pressures, you know? So, like, it's everything. It's you know, I think about last year as a great point of comparison for this offense, where you're throwing the ball a ton and you're getting those pressures, those five-man pressures versus five-man protections, and a lot more pressures are going to show up as a result. Here, just managing, keeping the easy stuff easy and the hard stuff hard when it has to be hard, and just deleveraging the quarterback and deleveraging the offensive line. Like, if there's one thing any offensive coordinator needs to take away from this season, it's those are the two hardest positions on the offense. Like, if you can make it easier for the quarterback and make it easier for the O-line by running the football, by play action pass, by whatever means you want to utilize, screens, however you want to do it, like, your offense will be much more effective because of it.
One question I did want to ask you is on the pressure front. I feel like there are a couple times that he invites pressure. It's like 2 or 3. But on the two that I'm thinking of, it causes him to miss guys that wind up wide open in the end zone. And of course, to be very clear, he played a fantastic game. This is just like the, hey, what's the next step for Jaden? Because he's only 9 games into his career, and somehow he's going to get better. There's a couple of plays where he rolls out, and if he just stops rolling, he resets his feet in the pocket. Like, cool, we're safe now. Like, we've dodged a little bit of pressure. We've taken, you know, the O-line's cleaned it up. And instead he gets on the edge, and say, like, Wiley's blocking the edge and he's got the inside sealed, and then Jaden gets out, and now all of a sudden you've invited pressure. He takes a hit. And on one of those, in the fourth quarter, I think it was, I can see in my notes if I have a timestamp on it. It's the 3rd and 4 with 43 seconds to go in the third quarter. And they wind up settling for a field goal on that drive. And Diami winds up wide open in the back of the end zone. And he kind of moves. And if he just resets his feet, he can hit Diami. Instead, he rolls out, invites pressure. He winds up getting hit on the play. And it's one of the ones on the broadcast where Sanchez is just like, hey, man, that's dead. Like, you gotta go. You got to know when the party's over. And I wonder if that is something that this week the coaches will be like, hey, just because you get flushed initially doesn't, like, either go or see if you can find a safe space, keep your eyes down the field. And that's an area he's already grown tremendously in this year, but I think that's another very specific opportunity for him to maybe create some big plays in second actions.
Yeah, and I think that's something, like, you know, when you watch the Cincinnati game from this weekend and see how Joe Burrow is so dexterous in the pocket, like, that's a skill. That's a skill that takes time to learn and develop. And I do think if there's one, you know, criticisms may be hard, but, like, you know, coaching emphasis, it is,
yeah, I
like,
think that's a good way to put it.
It's like, hey, man, like, this is clean. We're clean in the pocket. And that's really hard. That's really hard for quarterbacks to learn. It's really hard for them to get good at it. I think it's probably especially hard for a guy that's athletic as Jaden, because, like, if there is a pressure, I can become a runner and I become dangerous. But there is something to be said for small, subtle movements, quick movements in the pocket. Tom Brady obviously was excellent at that. And so I think, yeah, that's something he can get better at for sure. And it's a fine line I think you want to walk as a coach, because he is so good at making those decisions as a scrambler. And so you don't want to say, like, hey, man, like, try to stay in the pocket here, because, like, good things happen when he leaves it. But also you want to be like, hey, we can get better at feeling this and not making a big move to escape, but rather a subtle kind of adjustment in the pocket to maximize this opportunity and maximize your vision down the field.
I also wonder if the coaching point is kind of, you need to read the edge player. Like, if you're going to escape outside the pocket and loop around, you can't do that if the player is already out there. And, like, that was the thing that I think happened, especially on that play. I know there's one other that I'm trying to remember when it was in the game. But where the same thing happens, though, where the edge is sealed, it's one thing if the edge player comes back inside, like, loops on their rush, and all of a sudden that edge is sealed, and now you've got an open edge, and there's no one, like, a linebacker is going to have to come from the second level, or safety is going to have to come down to get you pressure. But if that edge player is already outside your offensive lineman, then you're either setting him up to get called for a holding penalty because he expects that he's in good position, or you're now running away from where you're blocked up. And I wonder if that's kind of the way that they could present it to him, where it's like, hey, we want you to be aggressive. We want you to look to scramble. We don't want you to run into pressure. And that's actually what you're doing there.
Yeah, and I think you look at the sack fumble that he had against Tampa Bay earlier this year, like, where he gets a little bit of pressure and he goes to vacate, and the defensive end, I forget who it is just rushing really high. Like, teams will do that to you on purpose, and I think a team that will do it is Pittsburgh. Like, they're good at kind of giving you these false indicators of space, and TJ Watt is going to rush really, really high. If you step back at all, like, he's going to get a sack, force fumble. And so I think, like, yeah, that's something that definitely needs to be addressed. And has he improved at it? I think so. I think he's gotten better at it.
Definitely.
I think he's gotten way better. And I think that, like, it'll still pop up because he's still learning. And I think we forget that he's still so young in his professional career. But yeah, I definitely think that you want to make sure you emphasize that, and you want to kind of, again, it's a fine line in terms of coaching it, because he has been excellent at making decisions about when to leave the pocket, about elevating the offense that way. But it's also like, hey, man, let's continue to cultivate this other element of our game. And again, I think Cliff's done a great job. Again, I'm going to say this for the fifth time on this podcast, of having a protection plan that allows him to be him in the pocket. And the way they coach the pass sets allows him to do that. They're not asking him to be Joe Burrow, where we're going to vertical set the tackles. We're going to, you know, make him navigate in a tight space that way. We're going to set the dish very similar to kind of how Drew Brees' pockets used to look. The tackles are going to be a little bit more aggressive. The guards are going to be a little bit more aggressive. There's depth and width. And so it allows him to operate and be him. So I also think, like, there's coaching there too, understanding who your guy is and how to maximize what he does.
Anything else from Jaden's game that we wanted to touch on before we flip over to the defense?
Yeah, just impressed, man. Impressed with him each week. Impressed with his development. And again, I've said this too. Impressed with Cliff. Impressed with the offensive staff. Like, it's a very symbiotic relationship in terms of how they've developed him. And I think everyone deserves a lot of credit. And we'll talk about this more on Thursday. But they've got a huge challenge this week versus Pittsburgh, and I can't wait to talk about that.
Want more from Craig and Logan? Subscribe now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. More Hoffman Show next on the Team 980 and the free Odyssey app.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Coming up at 6 o'clock, Charles Davis, CBS Sports. He's calling the game this weekend. I actually caught up with him a little bit earlier today, and we talked about the Commanders trade for Marshawn Lattimore. It was like right after it happened. Charles was very excited. He's like, I never get to do breaking news. And he did. I'm going to peel back the curtain all the way. He's like, can you give me all the details on the picks? That's how early we recorded. Was Charles was on his way to something, and he hadn't even seen the full compensation yet. Schefter was still trying to get all the details. By the way, you see who dusted off his old reporting hat today?
You?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure I'm the first person who reported that the pick wasn't the Miami pick.
Ooh.
You Which were. Is a pretty a important lot, detail.
Yeah, a lot of people were assuming it was the one they got from the Eagles.
It was not. It is their own third rounder.
Yep.
It is their own third rounder. I do find it funny that it is the New Orleans sixth rounder, a.k.a. the one they got for the John Ridgeway trade. So Washington was like, you can have that back. That's gonna be pretty high in the sixth round. You guys can have that because you're terrible. But when I was told by my source that it was the Washington's third rounder, not the Miami one, I was like, I literally texted them back and I go, I never want to negotiate with Adam Peters in my life.
He's good.
He's very good. This wasn't straight Lattimore for three. It was like, no, we're going to need this back. Well, we need that. Okay, you can have that, but then we need this. Okay, well, and we can't do that. Okay, well, then we can't do it. And, you know, when there's other teams on the horn to get something done, hey, I'm going to need an extra whatever to get this done. I got so-and-so over here, Baltimore over here trying to get it too. We like your offer better, but we got to – they're coming hard. Okay. We'll give you that, but you also got to give us this.
Mm.
You know, hey, that fifth round pick has got to come back. Okay, fine. And hey, we'll give you your sixth. Okay, cool. We got a deal.
Need it.
However it got done, he got it done. Real quick thoughts on some of the other big trades made around the NFL today. And we can talk about a few more of these in the context of our tier rankings that we still need to do at 6:30. We'll take more of your calls on the Lattimore trade at 6:15 after Charles. But, Anthony, obviously the other biggest one of the day is one that I think everyone saw coming. Za'Darius Smith going to Detroit. He goes from Cleveland to Detroit, 32 years old, can still get it done. Not in his prime, but still very, very good. And he helps fill the void of Aiden Hutchinson. Aiden Hutchinson, I still think, is top 10 in the league in sacks. And he's been out like 4 weeks or something at this point. That's how good of a season he was having. He's tremendous. Yeah. But Za'Darius can get after the passer. He's stout against the run. He plays really hard, fits that Lions style. And so for the best team in the NFC, they strengthen at the very least. There's no way to replace Aiden Hutchinson midseason, but they plug the hole. They've stopped the leak. And that's, by the way, winning most of the games since he's been gone. But I think that this just, in the same way that Washington now, they've been doing all right, clearly, at 7-2 with their current DB setup. Well, St. Juice being the 2 and Sanders still being the 3 and Noah being the 4 just puts you in a way stronger situation. And so now everybody else who was kind of a little bit overexposed for Detroit on their depth gets bumped back down where they belong. And that in itself improves the team nevertheless, and I guess helps lessen the drop-off. And now you're really just talking about the difference between Aiden Hutchinson and Za'Darius Smith, which is significant, but not as significant as that multiplied by the fact that everyone else is playing out of position.
Yeah, I think it's also worth pointing out they had another defensive end and Marcus Davenport, who they got, who came over from the Saints, and he went down early in the season as well. Yep. So to lose Hutchinson and Davenport, but be able to get Za'Darius back, I think you'll take that as a win if you're a Lions fan to bolster that pass rush.
No doubt about it. The other big trades of the day. Any in particular that you want to talk about, Ant? There's so many that went down today. But there's also, honestly, some of the ones that are more interesting to me are the guys that didn't get moved.
Yeah.
Like, what is Carolina doing? Why is Jadeveon Clowney still a Carolina Panther?
It's a great question.
Now, he might have gone to them and been like, look, like he's a Carolina guy, obviously went to South Carolina. He's from the Carolinas. He might have signed there in part because he wanted to be home. And even though it's been a miserable season there, he just wants to be home. And if the Panthers were like, we'll respect your wishes, fine. I want to sleep in my own bed and I want to make my money. And I'll show up and I'll be a good leader. Like, I'll do the things you want me to do, but please don't trade me. Okay. I respect it. That's how it should be, by the way. I know sports are ruthless, but it actually is, though, a uniquely American thing that players are treated like commodities. Like in European sports, European soccer, for instance, biggest players in the world, they don't get traded. They move clubs, but they have a say. The clubs are compensated often with ginormous transfer fees. It's just a different market system. But the guys don't get traded without their consent, where they just wake up and it's like, oh, I'm going. Marshawn Lattimore woke up this morning knowing probably that he could get traded. But 3 weeks ago, when the Saints were starting to slide, but we started 2-0 and one of the best teams in the league through 2 weeks. Like, Marshawn Lattimore probably wasn't thinking, especially 5 weeks ago, oh, I could wind up living in D.C. for at least a couple months at the end of the season. Like, dude's got to move. I don't know if he has a family. I don't know. Like, that is real human stuff. So if players are like, hey, can we not? I get it. And I think teams should respect that on a human level. That said, Lattimore's here. Clowney stays. I still don't get what they're doing with Bryce Young. Like, that's a wacky bit. The Giants holding out on Azeez Ojulari? Do they think they're going to get... Maybe that one winds up working out because he got a couple more years left. He's a younger player. I think he's got like another year after this, or they can franchise him, or they have some level of team control, but they've already paid Thibodeau and they've already paid Burns. Your season's in the toilet. What are you doing? They didn't meet their price. What was their price?
Do you think it's one of those situations where the Giants, 08, 2012, where they had three, four good pass rushers, just like, it doesn't hurt to, you know, have some depth, I guess. But what their asking price was, maybe, what's his name, Joe Shane?
Yeah,
maybe he was just asking for too much. Like,
no, and Ojulari's a free agent. This is the last year of his deal.
Oh, yeah, they're tripping. They're tripping.
What are you doing? Asset management is the name of the game.
Bad stuff.
Alas, Joe Shane, be Joe Shannon. Got his price. Got to get it. Okay. The market tells you what the price is. Take the best deal. At some point, like, congrats. You have Azeez Ojulari for the rest of the season. Now you can franchise tag him or lose him for nothing. Great work, Joe. Great work. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And we get back. Charles Davis gives his thoughts on the Marshawn Lattimore trade.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.